Wonderful. Well, it's my privilege today to bring us part six in our Who is God series inspired by a book by John Mark Comer, where we're not asking the question, is there a God? If you want to discuss that, then jump on our online alpha sessions, but where we're trying to understand who is God by exploring his character. Our start point, sat-nav location, was the top of Mount Sinai, where God, or Yahweh, reveals himself to the prophet Moses and describes himself in the passage that we've just heard read to us. So far, we've seen that God has a name, and it's not God, it's Yahweh. And that amongst many little g gods, Yahweh is different. He is the one creator God above all gods, who is not distant but close, is personal, not remote, and wants to be known. Then we saw that this God, Yahweh, his very nature is compassionate and kind and merciful. It's part of what makes him, him. And when we pray, we always do well to recognize that God is compassionate and kind and merciful first. Then last week, Paul Blundell, guest speaker, we saw that God says that he does get angry, but not often. And unlike us, he is slow to get angry. And unlike us, his anger is not based on revenge or offense or disagreement. It's based on injustice. We understood that one of the translations of slow to anger actually means long of nostrils. I love that. And if you missed it, go back on the podcast or the live video and listen to Paul Blundell explain it again. So who is God? Well, next week we'll look at Yahweh. The phrase punishes the children and their children for the sin of their parents. I know you're intrigued by what on earth that is all about. Well, that's next week, so you have to wait. But let's get straight on with today. So who is God? Well, today part of the answer is this. Yahweh is abounding in love and faithfulness. And remember, this is the very essence of who God is. If you want to describe God accurately and fully, then this is an important part. Say it with me. Abounding in love and faithfulness. And as usual, we have a roadmap for where we're going. We're going to start in a moment by going a bit deeper into understanding the original translation of these words. Then we're going to look at some other quick examples from the Bible that also refer to these words. Then we'll look at Jesus. And finally, we'll ask, what does all this mean for us? Okay, you ready? Good. Let's dive in. Well, in Hebrew, love and faithfulness is hesed and emet. Let's say that together. Hesed and emet. Let's look at hesed first. Like many Hebrew words, we don't have a very good equivalent for this in English. It can be translated a number of ways. One is steadfast love. Another is unfailing love. Another is covenant loyalty. Hebrew scholar Daniel Block says the Hebrew hesed can't be translated with one English word. This is a covenant term wrapping up all in itself all the positive attributes of God. So straight away we can see that this is something that's important. And for now, just make a note of this phrase, covenant term. We're going to come back to that shortly. But notice the structure of where this comes. This is the only character trait which is repeated. Look at this. It says, Yahweh says, I am abounding in love and faithfulness. And then in the next line, maintaining love to thousands. You see that word love is repeated. Now, back when I was at school, a long time ago now, I seem to remember being in trouble for using the same word in a sentence so close together. Anyone else? But in Hebrew, it's no accident. In fact, it's a deliberate method of highlighting and emphasizing the point, meaning that this is one of the truest things there is about Yahweh. He's abounding, spilling over, way past capacity in hesed. But also in emet, or faithfulness. Emet can be translated as trustworthy. It has this idea of reliability. Basically, you can count on Yahweh, he won't let you down. Often like us, when life gets hard or it's no longer fun or it's uncomfortable, we just bail, don't we? We just leave, we just get out. And in our society, we leave all kinds of things. We leave jobs, we leave friendships, we leave neighborhoods, or sadly, sometimes we leave marriages. Leaving is more normal than ever before, but notice, God is not like that. He's faithful. And this next part is really cool. Listen to this. In Hebrew, when you put hesed and emet together, it's called ahendiadis. Did you know that? Well, me neither. But ahendiadis means that when you put these two words, these two nouns together, they help to define each other. So basically, God's love is his faithfulness, but also God's faithfulness is his love. Just meditate on that for a moment. This is so cool. When I read this, I absolutely loved it. God's love is his faithfulness, but also God's faithfulness is his love. Wow. And his love, well, this is where our English translation is just so weak. This word, when we think of love, and that's the way it's translated. In our culture, when we think of love, we often go to emotions, don't we? And maybe we think after reading this that, okay, this means that God, Yahweh, feels warm or kind or these kind of emotions towards us. Well, he does, but he's already said that. In English, abounding in love sounds very similar to compassionate. But in Hebrew, it's quite different. Hesed and Emet are about God's loyalty, how he never, ever abandons his people. He's always faithful to the bitter end. Even our concept of loyalty has been confused. If you're like me, when you think of loyalty these days, word association, I tend to think of my loyalty cards for my supermarkets, which doesn't mean I'm loyal at all. It just means that I've got four different cards that I can be loyal with whichever supermarket I find myself in. Yahweh is not like that. This joining together of love and faithfulness is actually used all over the Bible. Just trust me, when you read your Bible now going forward, you'll just see it popping up all over the place. Now I've mentioned it to you. For example, the word hesed is used 126 times apparently in just the Psalms alone. Listen to two instances from Psalm 89. It says this, "I will sing of Yahweh's great love forever. With my mouth, I will make known your faithfulness through all generations. I will declare that your love stands firm forever, that you've established your faithfulness in heaven itself." Do you see what I mean? It crops up everywhere. And later in the same psalm, it becomes a prophecy foretelling about the coming Messiah. It says this, look, it says, "I will maintain my love to him forever, and my covenant with him will never fail." Or verse 33, "I will not take my love from him, nor will I ever betray my faithfulness." Yahweh's love and faithfulness together are one of the major themes of the whole Bible. And actually, it's one of the major reasons for worship. We stand in awe and wonder at Yahweh's love and faithfulness. What does it do? Well, as soon as you get a revelation of that, an understanding of that, it causes us to worship. But when we speak about God's faithfulness, if we're honest, I think this is true for many of us, it can evoke a number of questions. Like, well, that's good, but if God is faithful, then why am I facing financial challenges? Or why did I end up in an unhappy marriage? Or why did my wife have cancer? Or why did I have a miscarriage? Or why does a world have a global killing virus right now? Or a million other questions. At times, if we're honest, it's difficult to reconcile God's love and faithfulness with what we see in life. Well, let's go a bit deeper for a moment and try and work it out. In order to understand Hesed and Emet, we have to understand something about covenants. And to do that, we have to take a helicopter view of the whole story of the Bible. So you're ready to jump in a helicopter with me? Don't worry, I'll look after you, hold tight. Here we go. So this word, covenant, it's not a word we use in our modern language. If you've not been around church or Christian speak, you may not have even come across it. You certainly won't find the BBC News reporting that, for example, Boris has made a covenant with another world leader. Covenant is a word from another time and another place, but it's important. In ancient times, a covenant was essentially, it was a cross between a promise and a legal contract, but it was relational, which is important. Two or more people would make a promise and then sign a contract with clearly defined blessings or curses attached to it to keeping or breaking that covenant or promise. The closest thing we have to a covenant is marriage. Last week, Claire and I celebrated 23 years since we said, I do or I will. We made a covenant. We made a promise. A marriage is a covenant, a promise to love and stay faithful to each other. But a covenant is also a legally binding contract. And there are consequences if you don't keep that contract. In the helicopter view of the Bible, there is quite a bit, in fact, there's a lot of Yahweh making covenants. One of the first and most important is very near the start of the Bible in Genesis chapter 12 between Yahweh and a man called Abraham. In the 11 chapters before, we've seen that God has created this perfect world, beautiful world. Everything was wonderful, and it included at the center point human beings. But it's become, even in those chapters, if you read it, defaced by evil. And God calls Abraham, and the first thing he does is he makes a covenant with him. Listen to the I will language of this, Genesis chapter 12. I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all peoples on the earth will be blessed by you. Notice the progression. God promises to bless Abram and his family, and then they will bless the world. So there's this progression. God, the people of God, and then the world. What is God saying? Well, he's saying that he has a plan to put everything right. He's going to use Abraham's family, later called Israel. This is a staggering promise, but look closely. God does not promise Abraham an easy, carefree life with money in the bank and a timeshare villa in Florida, though that would be nice. God does promise to bless Abraham. That's what he promises. I will bless you. But if you know the story, it's anything but easy. The essence of the promise is that Yahweh will spread his life-giving, regenerative blessing across the whole earth through Abraham's family and future generations. And this promise, this covenant, later becomes a fully-fledged covenant several years later. It looks like Yahweh has been unfaithful to his promise. If you know the story or flick back and read it this week, Abraham's wife is childless, and they're now past the age of child production. Often we look at the promises of God, maybe over our own lives, and compare them to our circumstances, and they just don't seem to line up. But jump to Genesis 15, and there's a kind of a weird story. In fact, it's a very weird story, but don't miss it. Yahweh tells Abraham to gather some animals and make a sacrifice: a bull, a goat, a ram, and a few birds. Abraham cuts the animals in half and spreads them out on the ground. Now, I know what you're thinking. This sounds incredibly weird, but remember, different time, different place. In Bible times, this was called cutting the covenant. Maybe this is a good topic for you to discuss over lunchtime. I haven't got a PowerPoint of this because it sounds pretty messy, doesn't it? But what used to happen was they would cut animals in half, lay them in parallel lines, and then the two parties would walk through the pathway in between as a symbol, as a way of saying, if I don't keep my end of the promise, then may this happen to me, blood and death. Serious, right? And it was. But then the story gets even weirder, if that was possible. Yahweh, we read, causes Abraham to fall into a deep sleep, and in it, Abraham sees a vision of God. And in this image of the vision of God, it's a smoking fire pot and a flaming torch. And what happens is this image walks through the pathway of the animals. But notice, it's all by himself. If you're like me and you've read this part of the Genesis story before, maybe you just thought, what is this? It's kind of weird. And fair enough. But if we understand it, it's a really powerful moment. Yahweh is saying something incredible. Remember, a covenant is two parties walking together. And yet this image, this fire cooking pot and flame, is Yahweh himself. There's no Abraham. It's Yahweh saying, even if Abraham and his children don't keep their end of the deal, he will still keep his promise. He will still follow through on his promise to rescue the world and renew all things and put all things right, no matter the cost. If blood has to be spilled, it won't come from Abraham. It will come from Yahweh himself. He's willing to die and become like these animals on the floor to keep his promise, to be faithful, to restore and put right all of humankind. If you're used to the Christian story, I hope you're already connecting this story here to Jesus. And that's where we're heading. But very quickly, one more quick reference first. Zoom back out in the helicopter and one more very quick Old Testament story. Because sometimes when we read the Old Testament particularly, it looks like a collection of short stories with a moral lesson. And that may be the case. But actually, it's a brutally honest, raw story about God's faithfulness and Israel, or God's people, struggle to be faithful in response. It's easy to get lost sometimes amongst the murder and the abuse, even the genocide and basically every horror you can think of. But Yahweh is still at work. He still responds. He's still bringing good out of evil. And this gives us hope, I think, that this is what Yahweh is like. He's still doing it today, even in the midst of coronavirus, right? Yeah. We sometimes sing a song that says, even when I can't see it, you're working. And it's true. And remember, this Exodus passage is all over the Bible. Very quickly, one other person, and then we'll move on. The story of Nehemiah, a man who is a leader, and he prays this prayer. Listen to these words. You are a forgiving God, gracious and compassionate, slow to anger and abounding in love. Therefore, you did not desert them. You picked it up, right? Then jump a few verses forward. Then he says, now, therefore, our God, the great God, mighty and awesome, who keeps his covenant of love, do not let all this hardship seem trifling in your eyes. Verse 33, in all that's happened to us, you have remained righteous. You have acted faithfully while we acted wickedly. Even in the toughest time, this is Nehemiah, even in the toughest time, won't go into all the background now, but Nehemiah recognized that Yahweh hasn't abandoned Israel, even if it felt like it. Nehemiah says there's a day coming, though, when Yahweh will keep his promise, and he prays for that day to come. And who does he pray to? That's right, the God who keeps his covenant of love, Hesed, and his faithful, Emet. Now, Nehemiah doesn't get to see the answer to his prayer, not fully anyway. For that, we have to wait for Jesus. And that's where we go now. We've said it before in previous weeks, and we'll keep saying it. Jesus is Yahweh in flesh and blood. Jesus is the final fulfillment of the Abraham covenant. He is the embodiment of Hesed and Emet. He came to bless the world. All because thousands of years before, Yahweh made a promise. Israel failed, but Yahweh remained faithful. Even before that, Adam failed, but Yahweh was faithful. And when you and I fail, the good news is, people, Yahweh hasn't stopped being faithful. He can't. It's in his character. It's part of what makes him, him. And what we see in Jesus is that he takes all of our failures and our unfaithfulness and our broken promises and he takes it to the cross. He absorbs it all in his death and he overcomes it through his resurrection. We often refer to the gospel, which means good news, as starting in the New Testament, the book of Matthew, when Jesus arrives on earth in person. But actually, the gospel starts, you could say, in Genesis 12 with Abraham. God made a promise and he's still following through on it. Jesus died, rose again, and he will come back again to finish everything. Why? Because of Yahweh's love and faithfulness. We can hope for this. We can plan on it. We can bank on it. And this hope is not the kind of wishful thinking hope. It's not the, I hope the sun will shine tomorrow. I hope I'll get Lego for Christmas. We hope it's chips. That was an advert from the 80s. This is the type of hope that is the absolute expectation of everything coming good based on the character of God. John Mark Comer says this. He says about hope. He says, it's bedrock trust that no matter how many wrong turns we make or setbacks we face, we can sleep soundly tonight because we know that one day Yahweh will eradicate evil forever. He will remake the world into a garden city, a second Eden. He will bless all people on earth through his son, Jesus. All because Yahweh is abounding in love and faithfulness. I think you're getting it, right? Okay, I'm nearly finished. But what does this mean for us? What are we saying? Well, we're saying that God is faithful even when we aren't. Like Abraham's fire pot, God is still keeping his side of the promise, even when Abraham, then Israel now, and us, we don't. But what about those tricky questions from earlier? How is God still faithful even when bad stuff happens? When the world is full of coronavirus and people are dying everywhere? When my dad dies of cancer? When the spouse leaves and someone is literally left holding the baby? Well, remember the covenant. What did God promise? Did he promise an easy life, health and wealth? No, but he promised that he would bless the world through his people. Sometimes we get a distorted view of what that looks like. But when we say God is faithful, we don't mean, and let's be really clear, you'll never experience suffering. If you're new to Christianity, or if you're old to Christianity, or still working it all out, which, by the way, is all of us, let's be really clear. God never said that we would have a trouble-free life. In fact, Jesus made the opposite promise. He said, in this world, everybody, you will have trouble. But take heart, because I've overcome the world. That's where the reassuring part comes from. Does God want us to live rich and satisfying lives? Yes, I believe he does. He's our father. What father doesn't want good things for his kids? But like any good father, he takes the longer view. He's willing to allow things and to discipline his kids to see them grow and mature into their full potential. Challenging stuff? Yes, I believe it is. I love these words. Again, a quote from John Mark Comer says, God is more concerned with your long-term character than your short-term happiness. Wow. Think about that for a moment. And also, just while we're thinking about this suffering and evil, don't forget we talked about Yahweh being the God above all other gods. And Jesus prayed to his Father, your will be done. But let's be really clear, there are other wills and there are other gods with a little g. There are other gods around and other wills around. So when we talk about evil, we said it doesn't come from God, it never comes from God, but he can still use it. Some of you will know the writer, speaker and leader Pete Gregg. I was listening to a conversation with him on Friday evening and he was really clear that coronavirus is evil, it's devastating, it's not from God because it's not part of his character. But is God using the situation for good? Well, I believe in many places he is, in many different ways. What's God doing in this crazy season? Is he developing our character? Is he resetting our priorities? Is this situation that we find ourselves in checking our focus, checking where our security is? The Apostle Paul writes this mountain of a theological statement. And we know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. This means that even when difficult stuff happens, even stuff that's clearly against God's will, then God is more powerful than evil that we face. He has the ability to flip even evil on its head and co-opt it for good. So our hope isn't that nothing bad will ever happen to us, or that everything that does happen to us is even the will of God. Our hope is that no matter what happens to us, Jesus is back from the dead and anything is possible. And we live in the age when Jesus is restoring all things and will one day complete the process and return to finish this age and usher in the new age. So, how do we respond this morning? Well, two very quick things. First, think about what God has promised you today. Some things are generic and promises to all of us. Many of those things are in our Bibles, but sometimes he whispers specific things to us individually. I'd love us to remember those things today and remember that God is abounding in love and faithfulness. Does it mean that we still have to cooperate with God? Yes, it does. Does it mean some promises are conditional? Yes, it does. But know this, God is faithful. We sometimes sing a song, "Your promise still stands, great is your faithfulness." Let's think about God's promises and his faithfulness today. And secondly, as Jesus followers, we declare that we want to become more like Yahweh. So if Yahweh is abounding in love and faithfulness, then we should be too. Question is, how faithful are we? And today I'd love us to think in the world where we're so impatient, we want everything instantly. We want instant ready meals, instant text messaging, instant TV on demand. Where are the places where we, like the God that we worship, can be abounding in love and faithfulness? Where has God called you to be faithful? Let's put a priority on being faithful people like the God that we worship. Amen.